Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinema Gems. And as always, I'm your host, the Admirable Admiral. And as always, we are in a video store somewhere in your hometown, so come find us. Yes, video stores still exist. And maybe I'm talking at a much softer tone than I usually do to guys, but, you know, that's because this week we're going to be talking about a very just comfort movie that I feel is available, Abyss. But before we get into that, I just want you to know, I'm still here. No one else is here right now, but the dogs are here in the Central Florida location. And also, is that the illustrious Butt Maestro I hear?
Hi, guys. Welcome back to Cinema Gems. We're another show on the internet where a bunch of opinionated nerds talk about the things they love. And the Admiral's absolutely right. This is, I'm going to use a lot of very descriptive adjectives to talk about how much I love this movie and how excited I was that the Admiral had us watch this movie again. Have a lot of very deeply sentimental attachments to this movie as well, and especially its score by Alan Silvestri. We will get to all of that later. Right off the bat, I love this movie, but I don't know if the Admiral quite feels the same way.
Oh, and there's Patron! There's Patron.
Hi, Patron!
But Maestro says hi, Patron. She says, hello, but my show. First off, I don't hate this movie.
I never said you hated it. I just said I loved it a lot, but I think you had expressed some slightly different, more, a little bit critical opinions, and we need that on this show. It wouldn't be interesting if we both just ranted about how much we loved it.
And that's fine, and thank you, but I'm specifying to the listeners to let them know that I don't hate it. I just... it's a good comfort movie. I'll stand by that. It's a movie that you put on and you're like you feel all the drama and the shock and everything. But I'm going to be honest with you. This is James Cameron's version of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. But underwater.
Which is exactly why it's in my in my personal opinion, this is my favorite James Cameron movie.
Okay. I prefer,
and you're absolutely right.
I prefer Aliens. That's just me.
How did I forget he did Aliens?
Yeah, he did Terminator.
This is a whole different vibe, though. This is a whole different vibe. Like, Alien is action-adventure with kind of a horror tinge to it. This is, for most of the movie, pretty realistic-ish suspense thriller.
And that's fine.
Up to a point.
And that's fine. But also, I understand why James Cameron loves the water so much. Like...
yeah.
I'm just like, wow, because there are some shots when they were like when the camera would zoom out and you would pan and see the entire like submersible underneath deep one. Those are beautiful shots. Those are beautiful shots. Story wise, I'm like, okay, cool.
So let's start from the beginning with the story in this, because we get a little bit of a setup scene with an Ohio-class submarine, the USS Montana, deep, deep underwater, and has an encounter with an unidentified submerged object, is what they call it. They can't see what it is, but it messes with their systems and causes them to crash into a trench and have a very unfortunate accident with everyone on board. So right off the bat, trigger warning, if you have an aversion to being drowned or watching people be drowned, be careful with this movie, because that's kind of its whole thing.
But also you forgot to say the best opening line I've ever seen in a thing. When you look into the abyss, the abyss looks back at you. That's deep. That is deep. But I like it.
It's literally deep. It's also existentially terrifying. It's also very Lovecraftian.
Oh, so you want to know something really weird? So when I was at an estate sale recently, I picked up a fleet identification at a glance of the ships of the Navy. And Ohio-class submarines, there is no... you said Omaha?
Montana.
Montana.
USS Montana.
There is no USS Montana. Listed ever.
Yeah, I would hope so.
I wanted it to be real, man.
Yeah, of course not. It sunk in the Cayman Trap. Like, it sunk.
Yeah. So, It's the Cuban Missile.
You saw it at the beginning of this movie. It sucks.
It's the Cuban Missile Crisis 2, Electric Boogaloo.
That's kind of what's going on in, like, the general environment of this movie. Outside of the submarines and outside of this, essentially oil rig crew.
An underwater oil rig crew.
Gets hired on, essentially, by the government and working with Navy SEALs to retrieve the submarine that crashed. A.K.A. James Cameron having way too much fun with all of his underwater toys.
Yep. Hey, guess what? This movie was made, was the first film that James Cameron made PG-13. All his other movies are R.
That makes sense. Still, even though for a PG-13 movie, I would argue this has some very, very tense moments.
Yeah. And also this film takes place in 1994. I didn't realize that. Yeah. Oh, and also apparently, I have a fun fact about music, and then you can kind of just take. I'm gonna give you the handle, and you just run with the music, okay? If that's cool with you.
Go for it.
This is the only music that Alan Silvestri has ever composed for James Cameron.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they didn't have a very copacetic kind of working relationship.
Possibly. So take the reins, good sir, about Alan Silvestri.
So y'all have heard Al Silvestri's name mentioned on this show before. He's responsible for the score for Back to the Future movies and Who Framed Roger Rabbit and so many other things, including but not limited to the most awesome end scene in any superhero movie ever, the track called Portals from Avengers Endgame, like that whole build up. Yeah, this guy, Alan Silvestri, is the man. He's up there in my personal echelon of favorite movie composers, up there with Williams and Giacchino and Zimmer. And the work he does with this movie, I think he does a good job of kind of showing through music there are two worlds colliding here. Because musically, there are two worlds colliding here. You get a lot of score, especially when the Navy SEALs are on the screen, of kind of like that militaristic snare drum, and it sounds like marches, and it's the kind of score you would expect to hear backing a like human kind of military army, right?
No, yeah, no, I 100% agree.
And all of that every once in a while is kind of counterscored in these moments where the submarine team, the SEAL team, Bud, played by Ed Harris, and his ex-wife? Wife in the movie? Are they separated? What's going on
there? So technically, through dialogue, you find out that the divorce is not final.
Okay, yeah, the estranged wife, Dr. Lindsay, have these kind of moments with the thing that crashed the sub, the what they're calling an unidentified submersible object.
Or the Russians?
They think it's the Russians.
Which, by the way,
the military thinks it's the Russians, and there's a whole subplot in this about the SEALs going insane and like hijacking a nuclear warhead and blasting the submarine while they're all way too close.
Yeah, and they fire guns around in a submersible Deep One, and I'm just like, wow, that's smart. Yep.
There's definitely some, like, look, it's pre-90s action movie. I will say they're gun safety handling is mildly better than some like Schwarzenegger movies of the time.
Yeah,
but like I agree with you completely. Like the only thing that could be worse than firing this in a deep sea submersible would be firing weapons in the vacuum of space.
Yeah,
right. They're both pretty bad.
Yeah. Are you done talking about Alan Silvestri? Do you want to talk about
almost?
Okay,
almost.
Go ahead.
Almost.
Go ahead.
Because he cut me off before I could really describe these moments that Bud and Dr. Lindsay have with these creatures. Alan Silvestri takes on a very ethereal nature with this score. You might be able to hear it right now, because I believe the Admiral has just like the DVD menu on a loop.
Yeah.
And I think that's the scoring for the DVD menu. It that choir, that slow ethereal buildup is, I cry every time. And Buttmeister Sr. agrees. This is also one of his favorite film scores of all time. and he and I have listened to this together and watched the end of this movie countless times, just to hear that music again, because it's so good. It's so good. It's so moving. It really get, like, the first time I watched this movie, I wasn't sure whether to conclude that these things are aliens or angels, because the score really gives it that ethereal, angelic kind of nature. So I don't know. I love this movie, and I love Alan Silvestri's work in this movie, and his score makes me cry. There, that's my TED Talk.
Okay. I actually really love all of the music. Certain characters I really liked. I loved seeing Michael Biehn go insane. I just felt like the story, I was like, okay, are you going to find it eventually? Oh, wait, you don't know just yet. And they keep going. I just feel like, and look, I'm not James Cameron. I'm not an Academy Award winning director or anything. I just feel that the story could have been better nuanced and more straightforward than what we got. That's just me. That's just my take. But do you want to know what James Cameron said?
Confused Admiral, do you want it to be more nuanced or do you want it to be straightforward? Because those are opposites.
Both in the same time at the same moment. Both.
But they're opposites.
And opposites attract.
Okay.
So something else about James Cameron. Do you want to hear about James Cameron?
What you got?
This is apparently the worst production he's ever been on.
How so?
So apparently involvement of cast and crew, and composer Alan Silvestri, director of photography Michael Salmon, and I think Michael Biehn's the only one that liked making this movie, but I have another fun fact about him though. But yeah, because James Cameron is a notorious perfectionism, you know, he's very perfection, very, like, he likes to do certain things, but he also put great strain on the crew and actually filmed underwater for certain scenes. And it's like, dude, did you not listen to Steven Spielberg? Don't film on open water. You think just because you're in South Carolina in a tank, you're good? No. No, he, Ed Harris punched him in the face while he was almost drowning. Ed Harris punched James Cameron in the face. Like, and the slap scene, you know, where he's slapping his wife to wake up. Yeah. Apparently that was done like a ton of times and they had to stop because they were worried because she was getting slapped so much. Open face, hand, palm. Really? Really? But yeah, so that's why they never did a sequel, because James Cameron's like, I don't want to go through it again.
Hey, this movie does not need a sequel. In fact, it has an extended cut that, in my opinion, you do not have to watch because it adds a whole lot of detail that the movie did not need. That I'm
okay. Cool. That's what I watched. Maybe that's why I didn't like it.
Wait. You watched the extended version? So you watched the version with all of the extra Russian stuff?
Yeah.
And the world outside of the sub being paranoid.
Yeah.
In my opinion, that's all super unnecessary fluff. And it distracts from the actual plot
is
happening deep, deep underwater. And these people literally out of their depth on a mission they are not qualified to work, being dragged along by a paranoid military chasing something they don't understand and surviving deep underwater. That's the plot. That's the story.
Well, maybe if I watch,
they don't know what they're going after until they literally almost die, and then it finds them.
Well, you know what? If you take all that stuff out, the movie was actually good. So maybe I am correct. Maybe it needs to be not as nuanced, but more straightforward, but both at the same time. And that's why I shouldn't have watched the special edition. 2 hours and 20 minutes. 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Oh, you did not need to watch the special edition, sir.
I did it.
You did not need to watch the special edition, my dude.
I did it anyway. I did it. I did it.
I'm going to tell the Cinemaniacs right now, honestly, do not worry about the special edition. Do not worry about the James Cameron director's cut. Because as the Admiral pointed out, he felt that the movie was disjointed and needed to focus.
Yep.
That's what the original, that's the original cut. That's the theatrical cut. It is much more focused.
Okay, cool. All right, then great. So that's why I, so see, so technically I was right. It did need to be more nuanced and straightforward at the same time. But I watched the special edition that made it very, like you said, disjointed. So maybe that's why I don't like the movie this much. Okay.
And I want to jump onto what you were saying a few minutes ago, because I found more and more evidence to support it. All of the things in this movie that looked like it was probably a nightmare to shoot, including but not limited to the whole mechanic in the movie about this liquid that isn't water that you can breathe but helps equalize the pressure in your body and suit. It's something I only liked as a kid because I had and still have a fear of drowning. But it's I don't think this could. It's obviously sci-fi mumbo jumbo.
Oh, like, yeah.
It's not as bad as some of the techno jargon in Star Trek, but it's obviously like no y'all, don't drown yourself. Don't.
And also the rat survives.
Cinema Gems does not endorse self-drowning. But all of the things that would look like it was a nightmare to film, like I said, including but not limited to all of the underwater stuff, all of the close to drowning that happens, was actually a nightmare on set and actually a nightmare to film and shoot.
You know, George Lucas's effects company, ILM, did all the CGI and special effects for this, correct?
That's why the aliens look so good.
Yep. And also, this is the first feature film to use a very, very early version of Adobe Photoshop, which now doesn't exist anymore.
Oh.
Bookended. So bookended Photoshop book.
Oh. R.I.P.
And also, at least I think I'm pretty sure Adobe Photoshop. I might be thinking about something else. Probably thinking about something else. It was filmed on a $70 million budget, making it one of the most expensive movies of the time.
It looks expensive.
Yep.
Every dollar of that is on screen the entire time they're underwater in these submersible vehicles. Those things look expensive. They move like they're expensive.
Yep. Okay, so the mega tsunamis weren't in the theatrical cut?
Correct.
Cool, because I thought that was really weird. I'm like, wait, are these waves, is mega tsunamis just going to stay up the entire time? Is this the Abyss world? I don't want to visit the Abyss universe. Please, no. Unless you have peace. Please. Which, no. Apparently they do?
They do. Like, the aliens, even in the extended version, like, are kind of testing out humanity a little bit and kind of poking and prodding, or like, can we trust you? Trying to make contact with us. But eventually see, like, no, there is good in humanity.
And
this is, in my opinion, the best case scenario for humanity if we were to ever get contacted by any kind of extraterrestrial, especially if they're more advanced than us, species. This is the unlikely but best case scenario, is that they see us, they get in touch with us, and then they go, all right, they're a little touchy, but they're not so bad.
Okay.
That's the best we can hope for.
You know what? I can agree with that. I can 100% agree with that. That is the best case scenario for meeting up with aliens, is this movie.
Let's be more realistic. Smart alien species would wipe us out immediately. And recognize us as the threat that we are.
Yep.
As the unstable, paranoid threat that we are.
And by the way, The Abyss was released on August 9th, 1989. And also, it made $90 million back. So, you know, not an amazing budget. I mean, not an amazing box office amazingness. But it also got second place next to Parenthood, which is a Steve Martin comedy from the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, look, this is one where you're just like, wow, what is happening right now? Like, what is going on? And this movie makes you feel disconjointed and disbobulated, which I enjoy. I like the Michael Biehn scenes are really good. The scene where he's fighting with the light, with this knife fight.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was intense. He looked unhinged.
And
reading into the production of this, I can fully believe He's unhinged.
Yeah, so apparently, according to Michael Biehn, he was filming for like 4 or 5 weeks, and then he was in the South Carolina, like the big vat that they had, and apparently the lights went out, and he had a feeling, oh no, what's happening? I don't know what's happening. What's going on? And he didn't think he was going to get out of it. He didn't think that he was going to get out of it. But he's the only one that likes the production of The Abyss. I guess because he loves working with James Cameron. Because you know why? Because he got bit in Terminator on the hand. He got bit in Aliens on the hand. And he got bit in this movie on the hand.
Yep. Keep talking. I'm looking something up, Admiral.
Oh, okay. And they did put, use the world's largest underground lake in the world in Bon Terre, Missouri. They used a lot to film this for a bunch of their several water shots. I'm assuming the shots where Ed Harris is falling down and the man reaches 25,000 feet. What? I'm sorry. I also love the text to speech when he's like typing to his wife. I thought that was a nice.
Actually, it's not text to speech. It's just a text keypad because it doesn't speak out loud. But I mean what you know.
Thank you for understanding.
I got you. That was, again, that is kind of the emotional impact moment where the aliens intercept that message and show Bud, like, we see that y'all are capable of love. We see that in your last most desperate moments, in the last seconds of your life while you're facing death. Your choice isn't to lash out angrily at the universe. It's to remind the people who you love that you love them. And that's beautiful.
No, I 100% agree. And I'm glad that the aliens intercepted that message because it showed that, like you said, that we are capable of love. All right. So we're going to play a really weird game. But Maestro, completely, if you had an quote-unquote oil rig under water, who would you want as a crew member on here? From here, who would you want as a crew member?
From this movie?
Yes.
I mean, definitely the rat guy.
Yeah. Oh, Hippie? Hippie's cool. Yeah. I would want One Night as well. She had some great ones.
One Night's great. Dr. Lindsay, yeah.
Yeah.
She's brilliant and amazing.
Yeah. And I wouldn't mind Ed Harris because after this movie, he just did villains after villains after villains for like a whole decade, which I'm not upset, but I think he's really good in the hero sort. You know what I mean?
I would not want to be in the same enclosed space as Bud and Dr. Lindsay.
The sexual tension?
I would not. I would not want to be caught in the middle of that.
You know who I wouldn't want? Michael Biehn.
Hmm.
I would not want Michael Biehn.
Yeah, no, he loses his mind. He loses his friggin' mind. The U.S. Navy SEAL Lieutenant Coffey.
Coffey! I mean, is there anything else?
What do you know? He's a very bitter man.
What you said?
I said, what do you know? The guy named Coffey is a very bitter man.
Yeah, he's very gritty, you know? Yeah.
Ah.
And also, this is the first movie to be released under the THX Laserdisc program.
Oh, nice.
Wow, okay, cool. Apparently the studio, 20th Century Fox, pushed the Academy to nominate Michael Biehn for Best Supporting Actor.
Okay.
I'm not saying no, but like that's an interesting person to pick. It was unsuccessful, but you know, to each their own.
Yeah.
Let's see what they got nominated for. You ready? Okay, so
what did it? Yeah, I'm under accolades as well.
So it got nominated for Best Cinematography.
It won Best Visual Effects.
Yes, I saw that. But it was also nominated for Best Sound and Best Art Direction / Set Direction. That's cool. I would have gave it Best Sound. It made me really feel like I was underwater.
It wasn't even nominated for Best Score.
Nope.
That's dumb.
And it looks like it didn't win anything at the Saturn Awards. Looked like it didn't win anything there.
Yep. This movie honestly deserved more love than it got. It was a nightmare to make, clearly, because you can't make a movie about underwater things without it being at least a little bit of a nightmare. And in my opinion, especially with the Navy SEALs, with Lieutenant Coffey's death, as I think is a very good imitation of what happened to the Titan.
Yeah.
Is it too soon to talk about that? But like, no. If you were wondering what happened with the Titan, that's what happened. Actually, quicker, probably.
Yeah, because they were farther down than where Coffey was.
But like, even in Coffey's last scene, how the glass starts to chip slowly and starts to leak. Yeah, that wouldn't happen. The second there's a crack in that glass, it's all caving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, this movie definitely, it balances some of my personal nightmares of being very claustrophobic, very contained in a high pressure kind of space at the bottom of the sea like that, but also with these aliens, these angels, these ethereal celestial beings at the end that show so much mercy, that understand love.
And I'm glad that the
it's a feel-good movie for
I'm
me.
Glad that the aliens actually cared enough about us caring about another human as to go, oh hey, they can care,
which again is kind of why I'm on the fence about, like, are they aliens or are they angels
or are they terrestrial beings that we haven't met yet?
Terrestrial, so like from here?
Yeah, they just live underwater.
You think this is some like Cthulhu stuff where like they're alien beings that have been living and slumbering underneath the deep? That's also very likely, because there's so much about our own oceans that we don't know.
I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah, we know more about space than we do our own oceans, people. And we pollute it so much.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay, so this is one of six underwater-themed science fiction movies that came out in the span of 89 and 90. Would you like to know the other ones that came out?
Please.
Of course, you have The Abyss, which we're reviewing now, but you also have Leviathan,
okay.
Deep Star 6,
okay.
The Evil Below.
Never heard of it.
The Rift.
I know about The Rift.
And The Lords of the Deep.
Have not heard of that one.
I think I've seen Leviathan and Deep Star 6 and The Rift.
I was expecting you to name off a bunch of like late 80s, early 90s deep sea movies that I totally heard of. And then I couldn't think of any other than The Abyss.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Like, I can think of plenty of asteroid stopping movies, earthquake movies, other big natural disaster kind of movies, sure, but like specifically underwater, deep sea underwater exploration, there's not a whole lot of them, and not a lot of them are any good. Because
they fall into that category of, do you stay enclosed with the humans or do you go out and go outside with the water? Like, that's you're limited on the budget that you have,
right,
for the movie,
right?
So that's why they can't be very good, or they can be very good.
Exactly. Oh, I agree completely.
And last thing, John Bedford Lloyd, the gentleman on the ship on what's the one with the two tankers, the one that has the umbilical down to deep core, was it Home One?
Yeah.
Is it Home One?
I think so.
Him and Ed Harris later appeared on Nixon, the 1995 movie that Anthony Hopkins played Nixon. And they don't share a screen in that movie either. Like, they, like, okay. In this movie, you know how they never really are in the screen? They're two bits apart, and they're never, you know, next... So they share sequences, they share scenes again in Nixon, but they don't appear on the same screen again.
Remind me who this is?
Ed Harris and John Bedford Lloyd, the captain of the ship.
Jammer. Okay.
Yeah. That Ed Hammer calls to. Oh, wait, he's Jammer? Oh, then that's the guy that fell asleep. By the way, when that guy fell asleep and woke up, I was just like, whoa, out of nowhere, out of left field, literally out of left field. You know, the more I think about it, the more I should have just watched the theatrical version.
So I'm glad you mentioned that, because I want to get into our gem ratings on this show, and I want to potentially give you the chance for a mulligan, because I think you watched the wrong version of this movie. It's not your fault, that's just the DVD you had.
Right, I had the choice to watch either one, but I went with the special edition because it's James Cameron. So I like to go with the director's.
And more often than not, the special edition, the director's edition, I'm all about as well, especially seeing more of the director's vision. You know, if there's important things to the plot that the director wanted to put in the movie and they didn't have time for, yeah, the special edition is usually where you go. But keep in mind, this is James Cameron. All the extra stuff was not plot relevant. It was extra big CGI and big toys. Yeah.
So, if what you told me that all the stuff that takes place outside the sub and outside of the more Russian stuff, I would probably give this movie closer to a full gym than like in the upper echelons of a half gym territory, mainly because I love True Lies, Aliens, and Terminator 1 and 2 more than this. That's just me.
And just to give our listeners context, our easy rating show on a rating system on this show: whole gem, amazing movie; half gem, it was okay; no gem, don't bother. And I'm with you, Admiral. This is a whole gem for me, no hesitation. And I will say the extended version does take off several points from that rating, because, like you mentioned, and as you've kind of said throughout this review, all of the things you nitpicked, all the things you walked away from the movie not feeling comfortable with and not liking, it's all the extended version.
Yep.
It's all just the extra stuff they didn't need.
Yeah.
So the theatrical version, in my opinion, is dang near a perfect movie.
Mm. So it's the superior cut of the two.
1,000%. And I know how I know that's weird to say that the extended version is not superior. Trust me, I get it. I watch the Lord of the Rings extended cuts on a yearly basis, at least. Same with Blade Runner. Like, there are so many countless movies out there where the extended version is important because it's all the important things they couldn't fit into the runtime. This is not the case with The Abyss.
But yeah, James Cameron, why are you trying to drown all these people, man? I know you're listening to the show right now.
That's what was in the script.
I know you're listening to the show. But no, guys.
James Cameron, if you're listening to the show, thank you for giving us The Abyss. Thank you for all of the hard work and blood, sweat, and tears that went into that movie. We see you, we respect it, and it's an awesome movie.
I like Aliens and True Lies better.
The Admiral mentioned earlier.
James Cameron.
It's a comfort movie.
It is. It's a comfort movie. That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. Guys, just want to say thank you to Marty and the Aragon Zipper for allowing us to be on their website, lowrainpictures.com. Also, Kevin George, thank you for loading issues of music. Now, but Maestro, before we go, I just want to say thank you because for all the listeners out there, we're not recording at a regular scheduled recording time. We're doing a little bit of in and out subversion types of things.
What even is a regularly scheduled recording time now?
And I just want to specify, I just want to give a big thanks to you. That's it. That's all, about Maestro.
Heck
just
yeah,
thanks
dude.
To you, specifically.
Hell yeah. Thank you, Admiral.
Oh, you're welcome, about Maestro. But guys, just remember to take some time for yourself before you can help others. Mental health is the best health you can have, besides actual health for your body. But get mental.
It is important. It is important. It is paramount.
Yeah.
As we say all the time, you can't pour from an empty cup.
Exactly.
I want to thank all of our amazing Swapper Jacks, friends, and family for all the support and ideas and love they give the show, and all of our amazing Cinemaniacs. You can always email us at cinemagems15@gmail.com. And this week, I want to specifically ask you guys, what is your favorite Alan Silvestri score or specific moment from an Alan Silvestri score? Because I can think of at least three off the top of my head that make me tear up every time.
Go.
But I want to hear from y'all. What are your favorite? Portals, End of the Abyss, and there's a specific moment, I believe, at the end of Back to the Future 2. that like the theme takes a very kind of emotional pang to it. There's several.
Mine is the
he did a lot of great work.
Mine's the little kind of like, you know how it's like the song like the Back to the Future is like, ba-da-dum, like it just it sounds like it's dripping down. That's one of my favorite Alan Silvestri tunes, is just a little tiny just like just that. I know I'm not making sense to anyone.
Yeah, he also wrote the score for Predator.
Oh.
He wrote the score for The Mummy Returns, Lilo and Stitch, mm-hmm. Night at the Museum. You've heard his music. You have heard his music all throughout the MCU, all throughout other stuff. So yeah, I want to hear from y'all. CinemaGems15@gmail.com. What's your favorite Alan Silvestri bit? Okay, I'm done.
All right, guys. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to us. But we just want to make sure that, you know, if we're not the podcast for you, please pass on this podcast that you think your friend would like. We all have a friend that likes movies, okay? Let them know about this podcast. And if they know us personally, email us at cinemagems15@gmail.com or get in contact with either I or the Butt Maestro personally, and let us know what you like about this podcast, what you care about it, like what music do you like? Like, what is the best music that the Butt Maestro has ever talked about? That's what I want to know. Or, you know what?
Let us know.
What is the best music that the Butt Maestro has ever composed for this show?
Let's go ahead and head out for the week, Admiral.
All right, guys. Just want to make sure that you take some time before you can help others. But, guys, just remember that all we want is accountability and peace in the Middle East.
Please and thank you. That's all we want. I don't think that's a lot to ask.
No, it's not. And, guys, also, just make sure that you remember to wipe your hooves and see you later. But remember, black lives always matter, guys.
Always.
Bye, guys.
Love y'all.
See you later. Don't watch the special edition. Watch the theatrical edition.